This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there. This is the podcast, The Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, where we put the highlights of today's show. It's Monday, 24th of June, and today we continue our focus on what we're calling summernomics, the economics of the hot months. And it's a busy time for moving. I like to move it. It's a busy time for people moving into Dubai, moving out of Dubai, but also just moving within Dubai, moving from, I don't know, the Karama to Bird Dubai or wherever it may be. So we've got the thoughts of the boss of eMovers. Brandy has been speaking to Chiranthan Joshi. Lots of numbers from Chiranthan. We like that. What else have we got? Talking real estate with Waleed Al-Zarouni from W Capital, predicting a continued boom in real estate. He says Dubai South in particular, with the new airport, is a bit of a hotspot this summer. Talking artificial intelligence as well. You're going to enjoy this one. The so-called Turing test. Is artificial intelligence smarter than a human? Some reports over the weekend, a report out of the University of San Diego, suggest that we have passed the test. However, we're going to hear from Richard Almendinger, Professor of Applied Artificial Intelligence at the Alliance Manchester Business School, who says no, with a little help from the actor Benedict Cumberbatch. I can rarely say his name correctly. Did I say it correctly, Producer Jordan? Cumberbatch? You have no idea how many times I had to practice recording that over the weekend to get it right. Anyway, we'll hear from him briefly because, bit of context, Cumberbatch played Alan Turing in the movie of his life. He's the guy who gave his name to the Turing test. All will become clear. First up, though, big stories today. UAE absolutely nailing it when it comes to foreign direct investment. Going to jump into those top business stories, starting with the UAE and foreign investment. New report out from UNCTAD, the United Nations Foreign Trade Organization, says the UAE ranks second in the world when it comes to what's called greenfield foreign investment. It's the top story this morning for the guys at Emirates NBD on their morning note. Khatija Haque, chief economist at Emirates NBD, explains.
Foreign direct investment into the UAE grew 35% in 2023 to over $30 billion, according to the latest annual FDI report by UNCTAD. This was particularly remarkable given the backdrop of an overall decline in global FDI flows last year by about 2%, as high interest rates, slowing global growth, and geopolitical tensions all weighed on global investment flows. The UAE's investments abroad declined to about $22 billion last year, according to the report, meaning that the country saw a net inflow of FDI of over $8 billion last year.
Staggering numbers for the UAE. What about our neighbours in Saudi Arabia?
In contrast, Saudi Arabia's inward FDI fell to just over $12 billion from $28 billion in 2022, while the kingdom's investment abroad also declined to $16 billion from $27 billion in 2022. And that's also according to the UN report.
Is it just me feeling a little bit smug that we've beaten Saudi Arabia? It's a bit petty, isn't it? But it's how I feel.
No, I mean, look, there's a lot of competition, isn't there? And we hear a huge amount about new companies setting up in Saudi. I can't remember which recruiter it was we spoke to a while ago who was saying that out of the, I think it was Cooper Fitch, actually, because they do a CEO report. And they were saying about the number of new executive positions that were being created in the kingdom, but also the number of those new executive positions that were being created for brand new companies that didn't exist beforehand, rather than existing entities hiring management.
The pie is big enough for everybody to grow. Right, that's Khatija Haque on what's happening in terms of regional foreign investment. What about globally on the markets this morning? Most major stock markets in Asia are falling, not by much, between 0.5% and 1%. Not a lot this week in terms of big data releases or big events happening. So I asked her what's going to be driving markets. We're counting down to elections in France and in the United Kingdom in the next 10 days or so. Is that really big enough to drive global markets? If not that, what else?
Markets have already been impacted by upcoming elections in France and the UK. French 10-year bond yields have increased and the euro has weakened since the elections were called, and the CAC 40 index has declined more than 3%. In the UK too, equities are lower, and as is sterling, since the Prime Minister called the election. We can expect volatility as exit polls indicate the results of the elections next week.
Khatija Haq, Chief Economist of Emirates NBD. Staying with international stories, Tom, you picked up on a few big ones this weekend. Should we start with Blackstone?
Yeah, let's start with Blackstone, shall we? The world's biggest private, or certainly one of the world's biggest private equity firms. Well, they've got about $1 trillion worth of assets, which they manage across their portfolio. They are looking to buy into Theatreland at the moment. They are in advanced talks to buy a stake in the Ambassador Theatre Group, or ATG. They're the owners of some of the most famous playhouses or theatres in London's West End, the Duke of York's Theatre, the Lyceum Theatres as well. Transaction would be a significant one. It's the first time Blackstone move into sort of theatre land as well. City sources over in the UK, over in London, saying that Blackstone expected to acquire the shareholding from TEG. That's the Australian Live Entertainment and Ticketing Company, which in fact bought into ATG during the pandemic. A deal would involve a stake of anywhere between 10 to 15% changing hands. ATG majority owned by Providence Equity Partners since 2013, making it a lengthy ownership period by private equity industry standards. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you at the moment as Blackstone look to invest into Theatreland.
I'm going to try and make a theme out of these two stories. So Blackstone investing in theatres. You've got LVMH, or Bernard Arnault, its founder, investing in his favourite restaurant in Paris.
I love this one, yeah, because you mentioned LVMH, you know, one of the biggest luxury conglomerates across the world. Bernard Arnault, obviously one of the richest men on the planet as well. They are synonymous with all things luxury, big fashion brands, big jewellery brands, massive hotels, amongst others. But Bernard, you know, he's a simple man. He might be a rich man, but he's a simple man. He likes his chicken and chips. He likes his chicken and chips so much, he's bought his favourite restaurant. The Bernard Arnault the company has bought a majority stake in Chez L'Ami Louis. Qu'est-ce que c'est ça? So that's a 100-year-old restaurant in central Paris, described by LVMH as an authentic Parisian gem. So much so that they've invested heavily into it to, preserve the unique character and family identity of the restaurant, continue to support its French savoir-faire and expertise. Yeah, like whatever. It's because Bernard is a patron, and it's where he goes to get his chicken and chips. It's famed for its roast chicken, mounds of crispy fries, French maybe, and plates of sizzling snails as well. They've had some big names turn up in the past. They've hosted the likes of the Beckhams and the Scorseses, amongst others, etc. But it's held on to its family traditions as well. And it's been added to the LVMH portfolio now. So Bernard can, happily rely on his chicken and chips.
I'm trying to find the menu here. There's a picture on TripAdvisor, and it's not the cheapest restaurant. So you've got,
Paris,
for example,
shocker,
Canard Sauvage,
wild
duck, €62. Multiplied by four, that's 240 dirhams. That's one of the cheaper main courses.
How much of the duck are you getting?
There's a fair question. Poulet roti, two person. That's Bernard's favourite, yeah?
Yes, that's the one.
Poulet roti, that's on tier.
The entire thing.
The entire chicken. 100 dirham, €102.
Perfect.
400 dirhams. So 200 dirhams per person.
I do love it when we get to use Richard's native French on the programme, Tom.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
All right, we continue Summonomics. And this actually is an interview that we do every year to take the pulse of people's coming and goings. Literally, school holidays is the traditional time for expat families to make a move. But are we coming, are we going, or are we staying put? Very pleased this morning to be joined by Chirantan Joshi of eMovers. Thank you so much for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Brandy.
So you look after the UAE, the director there, as well as several other markets. Let's start with how busy you are over these summer months. What do bookings look like?
Inquiries have increased quite a lot. So I was just comparing last year with this year. In the month of May, I have seen 15 to 20% increase as compared to the last year, which is a great number.
Let's look at inward flows first. And I'm talking about international moves here. What are you seeing in terms of people looking to move into Dubai this summer?
International move incoming is also increased. Currently, the moves haven't begun because usually moves start when the school finishes. So we are currently working on proposals, but I'm happy to see number of proposals from a lot of European countries, Indian subcontinent, even Middle Eastern countries. A lot of proposals are being submitted. So I hope all those get converted into moves and we start packing them as soon as school stops.
Are you seeing more proposals, more requests for information than last year?
Yes, 15 to 20% higher than last year.
Okay. And what about moving out of Dubai? Again, over the summer holidays, what are you seeing in inquiries?
Moving out would be around 10%. I was just comparing the data of April and May about inquiries because the moves haven't begun. Usually moves will begin now in July, August, September. But the proposal data for moving out would be 10% higher and moving in would be around 15 to 20% higher.
Right. So interesting that it's more in than out. There's Bloomberg story out at the moment suggesting that we've got more owner-occupiers of houses, that Dubai is becoming less transient. Does that tally with what you're seeing?
I think we see inflows. We see inflows quite a lot and people are coming here for long term. People are staying here, buying properties and making their home. I don't know whether they're actually staying here, but they're definitely bringing their household goods to Dubai.
Okay, what about moves within the emirate itself? A lot of the eviction notices that were making headlines over the last year are now coming to fruition, if you like. What are you seeing in terms of the moves you're coordinating with people within Dubai?
Those domestic moves have also increased quite a lot. One good part about moving is when the prices drop, we still move. And when prices go up, we move. They are either upgrading or downgrading. But moves happen. And I have seen, I was just comparing the numbers again for April and May since June hasn't finished. I think the domestic moves are up by between 20 to 25% for April and May.
Are there any trends in terms of where people are moving to? Sort of the average distance? Are we moving further out? What are you noticing?
Villas are always in demand. So villa communities, finding a good villa is becoming difficult. Of course, the eviction notices have also gone to the villas because the rents have increased quite a lot. So we see people who are moving out of villa are also looking out for a villa, but probably cheaper. And there are apartments who are upgrading to the villas which are vacant, which are being vacated.
Okay. Are you finding that the moves geographically are longer, more people heading to the new suburbs in the outskirts?
Yes, we have seen Dubai expanding towards Dubai South. So we have now started getting inquiries for areas beyond Jebel Ali, like on the backside of Jebel Ali, which is Dubai South. Those apartments, those houses, those townhouses are also getting occupied.
What's happening to the cost of a move, Chirantan?
Cost of the move, I haven't seen significant change, but yes, there is definitely an increase because of the overall inflation. As compared to last year, the cost of move might have gone up by between 5 to 10%.
And what about the logistics of actually getting goods here by boat? Obviously, what's been happening in the Red Sea has been making headlines now for a wee while. What does it mean in terms of the length of an international move or what you have to plan?
The time is more than expected because even after you load the container into a ship, if the ship is redirected to a different port, it just means you need to plan 10, 15, 20 days extra. And don't just go on the last minute because your ship may not reach the destination at the agreed time. They are picking up cargo from all over, basically.
Are people being more organized? Are they factoring that in?
Yes, people are quite aware of it. And they are being organized. They're giving longer notices. I think people have awareness about what's happening in the logistics industry.
Chirantan Joshi is the director for the UAE, as well as Qatar and India at eMovers, speaking to us this morning about that traditional summer period. A lot more activity, it seems, but more people moving in than moving out.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And we're talking to a man with some very big forecasts. The real estate company W Capital predicts a record summer spending spree when it comes to property. Sales, bumper sales, compared to last year and the year before. We're very pleased to be joined in the studio by Waleed Al-Zarouni, who's the CEO of W Capital. Waleed, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Well, thank you for your forecasts. The numbers, they make you pause. 15 to 20% higher sales you're expecting to see than normal this summer, and nearly double 2022. How come?
There's a lot of reasons that make this summer different than others. For example, one of the reasons, it's launching new areas in Dubai, and everyone knows about Al Maktoum International Airport. Now, most of the people are focusing in that area and wants to invest in Dubai South area to be close to the biggest airport in the world. So this is one of the, I mean, the major reasons for increasing number of, property value.
Okay, so when we're talking about that 20% higher activity than last summer, we're talking about value. How much of that is down to price appreciation?
On price appreciation, it's going to be between 15 to 20% more than the last year.
So I guess what I'm asking is, are we actually going to see more sales, or is it just that the sales we see are going to be for higher prices?
No, we're going to see, a lot of number of new sales coming in this summer, inshallah.
What about off-plan versus ready properties? Is this bump this summer going to be largely in stuff that's not built yet?
In some area, I mean, the off-plan is more, and some area the ready property is more than off-plan. But in general, off-plan is more because of, you know, if you buy an off-plan properties today, you don't have to pay the full amount. You're going to pay this amount on an installment. Most of the people wants to buy, off-plan because of the installment and because of the easiest payment plan, which has been given by the developers.
What do we normally see in summer in terms of softness compared to the winter months, compared to Q4 and Q1?
I mean, there is not a lot of difference between summer and winter. But what we expect this summer, it's gonna be different from the previous years in terms of number of the properties, in terms of value of the properties sales. It's gonna be different.
Where are you expecting those buyers to come from?
I mean, most of them are international buyers, but I mean, what we are looking for, most of them from Europe, European side nationalities, they're coming to invest in Dubai. And what we would become to know that, 50 to 20% of them are end user, even maybe more than 20% of them, they are end user. They want to shift to Dubai and they want to live in Dubai. And some of them, they want to buy a property for the investors, for the investments.
So is that what you're seeing? I mean, if we take the summer away from it, is that what you're seeing in your international buyers at the moment, that up to a quarter of them are moving here and want to own where they're going to live?
Yes.
How do they manage that? Do they look and buy once they're here and been here for a couple of months? Are people doing scouting reconnaissance missions beforehand? What are you seeing?
Yeah, of course. They come to Dubai. They see the areas, looking into the areas where they want to buy, seeing different properties, different projects. And after that, they're deciding where to buy and in which area to buy.
What are you seeing in terms of existing Dubai residents? Are we seeing the people who are already here still making that move from renters to owners? What's the trend?
A lot of people moving from rent to own because, like I told you, the easiest payment plan, some of the developers even giving payment plan for the ready properties. So they said in case of paying rent, no, I'm going to buy a properties. I will pay that installment to the developers. And end of the day, I'm going to own this properties.
Can people find what they're looking for?
not all of them, but let's say 50 to 60% of the people, they find what they're looking for.
What changes do we see in the summer months in terms of how your real estate agents operate? I mean, how do brokers deal with things like showing people empty properties that might not have the AC on?
We have to show the properties. Even there is no AC, no electricity in those properties, but we have to show the properties to the buyer to make them convinced to buy this properties. I mean, no one can buy a properties without seeing it.
Do we see people making faster decisions, though, in summer? Is there any difference to how transactions happen?
In the fast decisions, not all of them, let's say around 30 to 40% of the people, they're doing fast decision. You know, in summer, people are moving because of the schools. They want to change the location to be near to their kids' school. So they have to take the decision, as fast as they can.
That's really interesting. Are you suggesting that people who are already in Dubai are moving to be closer to schools to cut down the commute?
Yes. Because, the closest you will be to the children's school, it's going to be better for your kids. You know, you don't have to spend a lot of time on traffic, on the road. So it's easy to reach to the school.
Are we thinking more about commutes than we used to when we're buying property?
See, most of the people, they want a lifestyle areas. They want some area to buy a property in that area to be, there's going to be a lot of lifestyle, like schools, hospitals, malls, shopping areas. So this makes them more, easy to buy in that area.
So let's look beyond the summer to the second half of the year. We're nearly at the midpoint at the moment, beginning of July. Cushman Wakefield reporting that prices have risen in Dubai for 15 quarters in a row now. How much longer can that continue?
I think it's going to be continue for around, again, more than 2 years.
You think the cycle's got 2 years more of appreciation?
Yes.
At the same rate?
No. Even the rent will be increased. Some areas rent has been increased. Some areas it's going to be increased more than what we have it now, even in the price of the properties. It's going to be more than this.
When we talk about the increase in the values of properties or the increase in the sales prices, what do you think is going to happen to the rate at which we're seeing the increase, the sort of the gradient, the steepness of the growth for the next 6 months?
How many percentage you mean?
Yeah.
Maybe 10 to 15%, around 10 to 15%.
Is there anything that could slow it down?
For time being, no, because everything, if you see Dubai, if the investor who want to invest in Dubai, what they're looking for? They're looking for a price. Price is wise is good. They're looking for the ROI. ROI is high in Dubai, between 8 to 10%. Safety, lifestyle, everything is there.
Well, Ido Zaruni is the CEO of W Capital. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right. Richard Dean has been finding out about the Turing test because yesterday was Turing Day. Who did you speak to, Richard?
One of the professors at Manchester Business School.
Richard Ali Mendinga, who is the Professor of Applied Artificial Intelligence at Manchester Business School. It is the birthday of the late British computer scientist Alan Turing. We're going to find out more.
So Alan Turing, one of the founders of the computer back in my hometown of Manchester in the 1950s, he's also known as a cryptographer, helping to crack the German Enigma submarine codes during the Second World War. This is the actor Benedict Cumberbatch playing Turing in the movie of his life, The Imitation Game.
Who are you?
Alan Turing, one of the best mathematicians in the world.
Welcome to Enigma.
It's the greatest encryption device in history.
It's unbreakable.
Let me try, and we'll know for sure.
Well, today, Turing's legacy lives on in artificial intelligence through the so-called Turing test. Is AI really as smart as a human? To find out more, I returned to the scene of his greatest computer triumphs, the University of Manchester, and spoke to Richard Almendinger, who's Professor of Applied Artificial Intelligence at the Alliance Manchester Business School.
So Turing introduced a test for what's known as the imitation game. So in this game, you have a human interrogator, and the human interrogator interacts with two hidden entities. One of them is a human and the other one is a machine. So in the interaction is then done just through text-based communication, similar to ChatGPT, which is what we do these days a lot. And if the interrogator cannot reliably distinguish from the machine, between a machine and a human, then the machine is said to have passed the Turing test.
Well, you say this week on Alan Turing Day, his birthday, AI moves closer to passing the Turing test, but we're not quite there yet. What do we still have to do, even in an era of ChatGPT 4.0?
I mean, you're making a good point, Richard, here, because there was a paper recently entitled ChatGPT Breaks the Turing Test. So it's a very timely topic. And if you know about ChatGPT, it's a natural language processing model, and it can generate responses to questions that we pose that look like responses that would come from a human. So we can say, in a sense, ChatGPT has passed the Turing test, and some people would say that. And certainly for short conversations, ChatGPT is doing quite a good job. We would say it would have passed the Turing test. But as you have a longer conversation with ChatGPT, you actually notice there are some flaws in it and weaknesses in ChatGPT.
What will it take to convince you, Professor Almingdar?
You would like to see that the machine understands what it produces. So at the moment, ChatGPT, for example, it produces a sequence of words that are suitable to address a particular query. It doesn't understand the meaning of these words. It's also only text-based. So normally we would like to have a machine that you can interact not only in text, but also in speech. So I think if we have a machine that can interact with you using multiple modes of data, puts the information into context and also delivers something that makes sense and with some understanding behind, then it would have convinced me it has passed the Turing test.
So if you were to give me, if I were to push you on a year, when you think, okay, I think that's when we're going to pass the Turing test to convince an AI expert like me and my peers, what would that year be? I mean, are we talking 2027 or are we talking second half of this century or beyond?
No, I hope it won't take that long. I would have hoped, I mean, many people would have hoped we have passed that stage already. So we're a bit lacking behind, to be honest. So I hope we have reached a good point in about 5 years' time, 2030. Let's put a number to your question, if you like.
Okay, we like that. So here's the thing, from my little world, and we all care about what it means for us, from my world of journalism, there was this idea that ChatGPT would revolutionize the way we do our job and the way we do our research, but it hasn't. For example, I put into ChatGPT 4.0 earlier on, give me five questions on the future of AI for Professor Richard Almendigger. And it gave me just five really bland, boring, obvious, generic questions. They were ethics, jobs, healthcare, climate change, and integration with other technologies like the internet, which is fine, but it's pretty basic stuff. What do you make of that?
I agree. I mean, these five topics you just named, I think it just ChatGPT suggested these because they're in media. So, and to understand why ChatGPT has proposed these five topics, you need to understand how it works. The way it works is it scrapes data from the web. So I think even if you would have put a different name in it instead of mine, you would have gotten probably three out or four out of these five topics as well. So I think it's a very generic response. So I'm not surprised that's what you got in return.
Okay, well, let's talk about what you're doing in particular, yourself personally and at the University of Manchester. And one of the things you are working on, to give ChatGPT its credit, is healthcare, and in particular, medical research. So tell me what it's doing there and why you think that's exciting.
It starts off with drug discovery. Can we find drugs that are more potent than drugs we already know about and have fewer side effects and ideally are cheaper to manufacture than the drugs we have available? And to do that, we use AI to help us guide through what we call the search space of different drug combinations. We use AI to tell us, for example, mix drug A and B together, maybe because we know drug A and B are potent on their own, Maybe if we mix them together, we can create an even more potent drug. And the AI tells us, for example, which drugs we should be mixing and at which dose. That's one example. We also work, for example, with the National Health Service in the UK, where we help them come up with fairer reimbursement schemes. We use different AI to do that. In one case, we use what's called sequential decision making. In the other one, we use techniques that are based on decision trees, what we call.
Another area that you look at reading your biography is in the cultural sphere as well. You look at areas like sport. And of course, I think of the city where you live, Manchester. I think of Manchester United and Manchester City.
Four in a row for the formidable Manchester City.
Let's say football. When we think about football, we think about he or she is a striker, defender, and maybe a midfielder. But actually, for the AI, we can go much more granular. We have so much data about what's happening during a football match. We know exactly where is the ball, who has the ball, what's the positioning of all the players. It's really big data, what we call. We can use that data and analyze the data to refine a strategy. Given a particular opponent we're playing to tomorrow, we can look at the past performance and player style, and we can use the data to adjust our strategy.
So, Professor Almendinger, let me ask you for your conclusion. If you give me 20, 30 seconds to sum up your view on AI, what would it be?
Yeah, I think we are at the breaking point where AI is changing the way we do research, is changing the way industry interacts with these technologies. But in a sense, also politics is being changed because they have to adjust to this new technology to make sure AI is used in an ethical way, is used in a secure way, and also privacy concerns are addressed. And I think if we manage to address these issues, we're in for a treat.
The thoughts of Richard Almendinger, Professor of Applied Artificial Intelligence at the Alliance Manchester Business School.
This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a DubaiEye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from DubaiEye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.